Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yuma Daf Ayin Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 20 lines from the top of Daf Ayin Beis, or if you prefer, in the middle of the Omid. You will notice at the end of a line a bow tie shape. On the side of the Gemara, we introduce this under our Mivneh, our structural note, where we've written Halachos. These two bow ties represent Halachos Shel Shnei Amoraim, teachings or laws of two Amoraim, Shesignon HaGemara B'Shneim Domeh. You'll notice that the structure of the Gemara is very similar. These two halachas, the first one deals with the tearing of Big Day Kahuna, and the second one deals with the Badim of the Oron, the poles of the Oron, and whether or not they are allowed to be removed. So we read now in the Gemara, Omar Rachba, Omar Rav Yehuda, Hamikareya Bigdei Kehuna Loike, one who tears the clothing of the Kohanim. Kohanim had special clothing, as is dictated in the Torah. If you look into Parshas Tetzaveh, you will see, in Sefer Shmos, that is, in Parshas Tetzaveh, you'll see what they are and how they're made. So one who tears these Bigdei Kehuna is guilty of a lashing penalty. Shenemar lo yikorea. There's a negative command, and throughout the Torah, violations of negative commands result in the punishment of lashing. Lo yikorea, they shall not be torn. The pasuk that was just cited is from Perik Chavches in Sefer Shmois, pasuk Lamed Beis. And on the side of the Gemara, we wrote the entire pasuk, Vahoyo pi rosho besocho. Safa yelafif saviv maisa ore kefi sachra yelo lo yikorea. The pasuk describes the Big Day Kehuna as being made with a border around where the head is placed, where the head is placed in, and in other words, the collar, the neck, and it's a woven garment, and it shall not be torn. We continue in the Gemara, Maskif lo Rav Acha bar Yankiv. Well, he asks, Vidilma hachikom rachmona. Maybe the Torah is telling us something else. Not that there is a negative prohibition in tearing it, but rather, Navid le safa ki hechi delo nikra. Now, when we look at the pasuk, you do see a reference to a safa. Safa is a border. In other words, the Torah is telling us, Navid le safa, make for it a border so as to prevent its tearing. So the Gemara answers with one letter. You see that that's not the point of the pasuk. Miksiv shelo yikorea. Does it say that the border is there so that it doesn't get torn? It doesn't say. It doesn't have a shin in the word. At the end of the pasuk, it says lo yikorea, meaning you shall not tear it. And as a result, we come out with this negative command for one who does tear it. He is guilty of that lav, a negative command. And as a result, there is a penalty of malchus. We continue with the next halacha. Omar Rebbe Lozer, Hamaziach Choshen Me'al Ho'efot, V'Hamesir Badei Oroin Loket. He makes actually 2 points, and they are removal of the breastplate from upon the ephod garment of the Kohen. The Kohen Gadol, the high priest, had 8 garments in addition to the 4 garments of the Kohen Hedyot. He had an additional 4 garments, and that included the ephod, which was worn above the Ksones, and on that was a breastplate. A breastplate containing the Urim V'Tumim, the stones that had the names of the tribes written on, and there will be quite a long discussion about that later in our Shiurim. So one who removes the choshen from the ephod, the choshen was attached to the ephod. Ephod, again, is the name of a garment worn on the upper part of the Kohen Gadol's body, and the choshen was attached to that. So one who removes it and is guilty of this, of these, of this lav, of lo yizach, do not remove it. And of course, that's in the Torah, found in the context of the Big Day Kahuna. And another pasuk regarding the poles of the Aron, that's Hamesir Bade Aron Loke, one who removes the poles that were attached to the sides of the Aron. They were attached through rings that were protruding from the sides of the Aron, and through these rings there were poles. So the pasuk says, "Velo Yosuru," the poles shall not be removed. They are kept in the in their rings, attached to the Aron at all times. Maskif lo Rav Acha bar Yaakov. So he, Rav Acha, asks, "V'dilma ki kom rachmona chad kinhu v'avdinu shapir kedei shelo yizach v'lo yosuru." Maybe all the Torah is saying when it says lo yizach and lo yosuru is chadkinu, is to attach it in a firm way so that it doesn't slip out, it doesn't fall off of where it is. In other words, like we saw before, and this is what we mentioned in our introduction to this section, that the structure of the Gemara is similar in so far as who says that these are negative commands resulting in a punishment of lashing. Maybe they're simply instructions in how to make these items initially, make them in such a way so that the attachments don't fall off or don't get removed, but not that there is a negative command, a violation with lashing for one who actively removes these items. So the Gemara answers, Miksiv, does it say She'lo Izach ve'She'lo Yosuru? Again, the Shin would be a type of causative. You know, make it in such a way, or cause it such that it doesn't get removed, or doesn't slip out of place. It doesn't say that, though. You don't have the shin preceding the word lo in the pasuk. The pasuk is stating emphatically that you shall not remove them from what they are attached to. And if one does so, so there is, in fact, lashing. Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanina Rami. Rabbi Yossi raises a discrepancy between two psukim. Ksiv, one pasuk says, "Betabaos horon yu habadim lo yosuru mimenu." The tabos are the rings of the Aron, of the holy ark that contain the Ten Commandments. So in the ark, in the there shall be rings attached to the sides of the ark, and then through them are the badim. The badim are the poles. Lo yosuru mimenu. And Rashi on this says, Kosav lo yosuru. Alma, Rashi halfway down says, Alma ein zozin mehem. They don't move from there. And then Uksiv, the Gemara continues, there's another pasuk that says, Veheveso es habadim betabos. And on this Rashi says, where we left off, Rashi says, Uksiv veheveso alma hulchin uboyim besochan. Veheveso means they go and come, they move in and out. So one pasuk indicates they don't move. The other pasuk says they do move. How do you reconcile that? Ha ketzat. So how is that to be explained? Misparkin v'ein nishmotim. We look at Rashi. Misparkin v'ein non nishmotim birasheim hoyu ovim. We have a crude diagram on the side of the Gemara. If you could imagine, and forgive the analogy, but if you were to imagine two baseball bats that are at the handles are attached to one another, forgetting the little knob at the very tip of the baseball bat near the where you hold it, if you were to attach them to one to another, handle to handle, so you would have what we are trying to describe here, which would be, as Rashi says, they can be detached. Misparkin means they can be detached But the Einishmotin Borashen, Hayu Avim, at the heads of the poles, the extremes of the poles, they were thick. Vihichnis Roshon Echod Bedochak Betabas, and you would put the one end. Now the rings that were on the side of the Aron, so there were two rings on each side of the Aron. So you would insert the pole these poles were, as we said, imagine again the two baseball bats that you were putting them handle first into the rings, so that the wide part, as the end of the pole widens, it would be wedged into the ring, so to speak. That's what Rashi seems to be describing. Hichnis roshen echad bedochak. Dochak is to be pushed in in a tight fit. Batabas uvemtson hoyudakin. In the middle, though, the poles were narrow, were thin and narrow, with a small diameter, relatively speaking. Hilkoch lo hoyu nidchokin betabos, elo misparkin v'holchin lekan ulekan. They could be misparkin is to be taken apart if you pull them apart in opposite directions. Avol eino nishmotin lotzeis mehem, but as when they are attached, they wouldn't slip out of place. Lefi shehem ovin baroshem, because at the other ends, at the far ends of these poles, they were thick, so they wouldn't be able, they wouldn't move when attached. They wouldn't move, but if you needed to, and certainly in the construction, that's what they did. They were put in narrow end first through the rings, and thereby we accomplish what the Gemara says. They were misparkin the einish, but they could be removed in this, and that would be a fulfillment of the vehevesos abadim posuk. And lo yosuru is fulfilled by the fact this is einish shmotin, they wouldn't slip out of place when they were attached to the oron. We saw before, though, that once they were put into the rings, they were not allowed. One was not allowed to ever take them out. Tanyo nami hochim. We have a Tanaic source that supports this. Batabos ha'oron yu habadim. That is the pasuk. Yocholo yu zozen mimikomen. Is it possible that they could not be moved out of place? Tamud lomar v'huvo es bado batabos. Indicating that they could be moved out of place. In other words, potentially, theoretically, they could be moved out of place. As the pasuk says, you shall insert the bottom into the rings, indicating that there is movement that is possible. If that be the case, then should we understand that they would be slipped in and out? Tamud lomar batavos oron yu habadim. The badim shall remain in the rings. Ha ketzad. So how do you resolve this idea of it being able to be put into the rings and yet not removed from there? And so we say, misparkin v'ein nishbotin. They could be pulled apart, but when they were affixed in there, they wouldn't slip out of place. And we're simply adding, not only were they wouldn't slip out of place, but one is not allowed to take them apart either. We continue in the Gemara with a new marking. You see triangles, and these triangles introduce comments of Rav Chama Rebbe Hanina. As we go on, we will also see three pshatim, and this is under our Nosei heading. Gimel pirushim leposuk atzei shitim oindim. So we continue in the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Chama bar Rabbi Chanina, my dichtiv viosiso es hakroshim lemishkan atzei shitim oindim. The posuk features the making of the boards forming the walls of the Mishkan. The Mishkan, of course, was the portable version of the Beis Hamikdash that accompanied the Jews in their exodus from Mitzrayim, and it was formed by boards that were called krushim. The pasuk says that these boards were made of atzi shitim. Shitim is a type of wood, shita wood, omdim, that stood. What is the what's the depth or the drusha behind that pasuk? So number one, she'oimdim derech gedilosan, that when making the boards, they would be fashioned in the same direction or position as they were when part of the tree, as the tree was growing. So the height of the boards is taken from the height of the tree. Dover acher oimdin shemamidim es tzipuyon. Rashi has two pshatim on this. Shemamidim es tzipuyon. Tzipuy azov mamidin al yedei masmerois. There was a, they were coated with gold, and the gold was kept in place with pegs or nails. Loshen acher shelo hisliu velo nofal tzipuyon. They never became wormy, thereby causing the coating to fall off. The plated gold plated plates of gold that coated these, that covered these boards, never fell off. That's shema amidim. That's the word oimdim in the pasuk, that the boards and the coating is supported on them. Tavor acher oimdim. The another take on the word oimdim. So if this is the third pshat on it. Is Shemo Toimar Ovat Sivron Ubotel Sikuyon. You might say that once the Mishkan was put out of service, it was hidden away, that it will never come back. So Talmud Lomar, and now again here the translation is Ovat Sivron Ubotel Sikuyon, is there is no more hope, and we will never see them again. That's the literal translation. So, Talmud Lomar Oimdim, She'oimdim le'oilom u'le'oilomim. They are forever. They are permanent. Now, this is a very called abstract, or it's a difficult Gemara to understand on the face of things, because we don't see in our sources any return to the use of the Mishkan. So, what difference does it make to us once it was put away? So that's it. It's gone. It's gone. Let it be gone forever. What difference does it make to us? Why is it so important for the Torah to reveal that it is, though it was hidden away, it's still around and there is still hope for it? What's the point of that? So that does require further explanation. I have seen explanations, but it's been a long time since I saw them, and they are in the more, we'll call it more mystical realm of understanding. So, for our purposes, we raise the question, and for those who are interested, there is what to look into further. But we will continue in the Gemara. The Omar Rabbi Chamo Bar Hanina, my dichtiv es bigdei hasrod lishares bakodesh. The word srod is something that is a remnant or something that survives. What's the point of calling the bigodim, the clothing of the kohanim, by this term? So we continue at the top of Amud Beis, and the Gemara explains, Il mole bigdei kahuna, if not for the clothing of the kohanim, and the clothing of the kohanim, as Rashi says, enabled sacrifices to be offered. In other words, without kohanim clothing, if one walks in with a very expensive designer business suit that might cost thousands of dollars, in all due respect, as fine a piece of clothing that may be, one cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash. A kohen, though he is of Kohen descent, that he can still cannot serve unless he is wearing formal Big Day Kahuna, official Big Day Kahuna. Therefore, without them, sacrifices which atoned for the Jewish people, which were responsible for, as we say, our atonement, the removal of sin, enabling us to continue, that wouldn't have been able to be without the Big Day Kahuna. So the Gemara is saying, if not for them, Il mole Big Day Kahuna, lo nishtayer, Misoneim Sheyisrael. Now this expression, Misoneim, is a euphemism. When one wants to speak in the negative about the Jewish people, so presentation is in terms of the enemies of Israel, but that's a euphemism. So in order to make sure that we've got it clear, the Gemara is saying that if not for the big Bekuna, no Jews would remain. Lo nishtayer misoneim sheyisrael sorid upolit, no remnant. And here you see we dash on the line word sorid, hence big day srud. The clothing of the Kohanim enabled the Jews to lisrod, as they say in Hebrew, to survive. If not for that, there would be no sorid upolit, a survivor, or someone who remains. A polit is someone who escapes. There would be no escapees, no remnants. Hence, they are called Big Day Srod. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Omar. Debei Rabbi Shimon Tana. So Rabbi Shmuel tells us that in the Yeshiva Rabbi Shimon, they have the following teaching as to what are Big Day Srod. Begodim Shegordin Oison Kivriyoson Miklehen U Misardin Mehen Klum. This source deals with the manufacture, the making of the Big Day Kahuna. They were made in such a way that they were gordin osan, that means they were removed from the loom on which they were made, kibriyosan, intact, in a complete fashion. And then it says umisardin mayam klum, means a certain part of the Big Day Kahuna were left incomplete. That and that part, what we're going to say in a moment, the sleeves, that part was not woven together with them. Umisardin mayim klum means a little bit was left unwoven or not made together with the body of the clothing. Mayhi, what is referred to here? Reish Lakish Omar. Elu Maisim Machat. Literally, that is the work of a needle. So the Rashi explains that there was a part of the Big Day Kahuna that were woven in and of themselves separately, and they were attached by with a needle, meaning sewn together. The Gemara asks Meisvei. Big Day Kahuna ain oisin oison maisemachat. The Tanaic source says that the Big Day Kahuna were not made with any sewing. Ela maisa oreg. There was completely woven. Shneamar maisa oreg. The pasuk says they were woven, not sewn. There was no sewing. Omar Abaye lo nitzricha elo lebeis yad shelohem. As we said earlier, and now we see it in the text, the reference made to the Maisim Machat was the attaching of the sleeves. In other words, as far as the body of the Big Day Kahuna, the entire Big Day Kahuna, the entire Kohen clothing were woven. However, after the body of the clothing and the sleeves of the clothing were woven, so then they were attached through sewing. Kidisanya, as the Tanaic source says, Beis Yad Shel Big Day Kahuna Nereges Bifnei Atzmo, the sleeves of the Big Day Kahuna were woven by themselves separately, Venidbekes Ima Beged, and then attached to the body of the garment, Umagas Ad Pisas Yad, and the length of the sleeves were such that they reached the palm of their hand, of the Kohen's hand. We now continue with a new discussion. We turn to the Aron, the Ark, the Holy Ark that held the Ten Commandments. And on the side, we have a Nosei and Mivneh heading, a topic heading with a structural note, where we've written Shiur Gova Aron. The topic deals with the height of the Aron. And the diamonds represent Shnei Deos Al Goyve Hachitzoni, two opinions as to the height of the outer box. We're going to see later that the Oron was in effect a series of three boxes, one fitting into the other. The outermost box, the outer of the three boxes, and the inner of the three boxes, the inner one, were made of wood and covered with gold. The middle box was made of wood. It was not covered, it wasn't coated from its sides with gold, but we will see by looking, by learning the Gemara and looking carefully at the Rashi, the upper rim of that was covered with gold, so that when you were to take off the cover of the Aron and look upon the boxes, you would see, you would only see gold. Looking at the outside, you would see gold. Looking at the inside, you would see gold. No wood would be visible. The Gemara. Omar Rachba, Omar of Yehuda, Shalosh Aroinois Osa Bezalel. Bezalel made three boxes. Bezalel was the one charged with the construction of the Mishkan and its vessels. So we are told that Bezalel made three boxes. And Soy Shel Eitz, the middle box was made of wood. Tisha means nine tvachim. Now that measure is from its outside. In other words, from the Aron sat flat on the ground. There were no legs or pedestal to it. This middle box, if you were to place it on the ground and measure it from the ground to its upper edge, it would be nine tvachim. Panimi shel zohav shmoina. The innermost of the three boxes was eight tvachim, and it's described as zohav, made of gold. And as we mentioned, it was essentially coated with gold. Chitzon shel zohav, the outermost box, was gold as well. Asora umashihu. It measured 10 tfachim. And a mashu means and a little bit more. Now, before we go further, we should point out that the Torah has what to say about the dimensions of the Oron. The Torah says that the Oron measured amo v'chetzi komoso. That means 1.5 amos. One amo is 6 tfachim. So 1.5 amos is 9 tfachim. In addition to the 9 tfachim of the boxes, there was a cover that was placed upon the Aron that had a thickness of 1 tefach. So you can speak about a total of 10 tfachim of height. So curiously, when the Torah speaks about amo v'chetzi koimoso, what are we really talking about? We're talking about the middle box, the box that was made of wood. The extra tefach that you see on that outermost box was basically to surround the cover that was placed within that rim that sat on top of that the inner boxes. There is a reference here to 10 tefachim and a mashu. That mashu will be discussed a bit later in the Gemara. Mashu means just a negligible additional amount. We ask, V'hotanyo achad osor umashuhu? Is there not a source that says that the outer box measured 11 and a mashuhu? The Gemara says, lo kashya. There isn't a contradiction. As far as this doesn't negate Rav Yehuda, but rather ha kemandomer yesh ba'avyoy tefach, ha kemandomer ein ba'avyoy tefach. There are two opinions as to the thickness of the bottom of that outermost box. If you say that the outermost box had a thickness, the bottom of it, the bottom of the box had a thickness of a tefach, so that would increase the height to a total of 11 and a mashu. However, if you say that the outermost box had a very thin bottom to it, it doesn't then figure in our calculations, and it remains the 10 tvachim and mashu that we referenced, that Rav Yehuda made reference to before. Umay mashu, the Brisa made reference to a mashu, or we should say the we said Mashu actually in the Brisa, and we saw in Rav Yudah also made reference to what is that Mashu for? Rashi points out that the question is focused on the Brisa. Because as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, the Mashu in the 10 Tfachim and Mashu, that Mashu simply is the thickness of the bottom of the outermost box. However, according to the Brisa, that the thickness of the bottom was a clear Tefach, a full hand breadth, what's the extra mashu referred to in the Brisa? So the Gemara answers, Zer. Zer is a type of, literally it's a crown, the type of decorative rim that is around the upper edge of the Oron. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Shloisha Zerim Heim. There are three references to crowns in the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. Shel Mizbeach, Vishel Oroin, Vishel Shulchan. The Mizbeach referred to here is the golden altar that sat in the Heichal for the offering of the daily incense. The Oron, as we have finished discussing, and the Shulchan was the table that held the 12 Lechem Haponim from week to week. Also in the Heichal, three vessels in the Heichal, and each one had a type of crown around its edge. We'd call it a type of jagged decorative rim around their edges. What do they represent? Shel Mizbeach, the crown around the Mizbeach, Zocho Aaron V'Notlo, the crown of the Mizbeach represents the priesthood, and the crown of the Mizbeach is something that Kohanim merit. They were zoche in receiving that crown, so to speak. Shel Shulchan, the crown of the table, Zocha David v'Notlo. The table represents it holds the breads. It represents power and control over income and food and wealth. That's associated with the monarchy, with the kingdom, and the kingdom referred to specifically as the Davidic dynasty. Shel Oroin, the crown around the Oron. What does that represent? Adayin Munachu. It's still there. No one has a monopoly. No one took over the crown of the Oron. The Oron represents the Torah. Kol ha-roitze likach yavo v'yikach. The Torah is available for anyone who wants to come and take it. Anyone who wants to dedicate themselves to Torah study can get the crown of Torah. Shema tomar pochosu. You might say, well, it's very nice that there's a crown associated with the Torah, but maybe it's an inferior type crown. Talmud Lomar, so we answer, the Pasuk says in Mishlei, Bi Melochim Imlochu, through me. And Mishlei is sometimes called the Book of Parables. It represents the Torah. And the Pasuk is saying that through me, kings will reign. And Rashi points out that he who grants kings power is a superior force than the kings themselves. If the kings simply derive their power through another entity, and this in this case being the Torah, the king is subservient to the Torah. And there is a section in the Torah itself that describes the mitzvah of a king to have a sefer Torah with him at all times. He is bound to the Torah. The Torah is superior, is a greater force, and hence the offering here of the crown of Torah to anyone who wants to come and get it. One should realize that he is empowered even more so than a king, so to speak. We continue in the Gemara. You can see we have a triangle marking, and they introduce two instances where Rabbi Yochanan raises what seems to be a contradiction or an inconsistency in the psukim. So Rabbi Yochanan Rami, Rabbi Yochanan raises a contradiction. Ksiv Zer, the letters Zion Reish appear, and one could read that conceivably as something else. For example, Zar, which means a stranger. The Karinon Zer, but we read it as Zer. So how do you resolve this difference? That on the one hand, the letters could be read one way, just by looking at the letters, and there's the actual reading, which is a different way. The Gemara says both are legitimate. Zocha, nase lo zer. If a person merits learning Torah with pure intent, what Rashi calls lumoid lishmo lekaimo, he learns with proper intent, intent of fulfilling the rule, or say the rotzon, the desire of the Almighty, and to fulfill its precepts, then it becomes, the Torah serves to him as a zer, it's a crown for him. Lo zacha zara emenu. If he doesn't approach Torah like that, he approaches it with some other personal motive other than the fulfillment of the Ratzon Hashem, so we refer to an ulterior motive, then Zora Heimenu. Rashi says, Mishtakachas Mimenu. Zora literally is someone that's something that's strange. Rashi adds, though, it will be forgotten from him. He'll learn, but he's learning with his ulterior motives. He might learn, but he will forget. Rabbi Yochanan Rami. Ksiv. On the one hand, it says, V'osisa l'cho aron eitz. Moshe Rabbeinu is charged with making for himself. V'osisa l'cho, you will make for yourself from your own means, you will make the aron, the ark, that the holy ark. Uksiv v'osu aron atzei shitim. Another pasuk, though, says, they shall make the ark. Mikan, from here we learn, L'talmid chacham shebnei iroi mitzuvin lasois loy malachto. If there is a community, and in the community there is a Torah sage, there is an expectation for the community to maintain the Talmud chacham. Now, maintain doesn't necessarily mean that he has to be provided with several vacation homes and a fleet of luxury automobiles, but basic needs of the Talmud Chacham are to be provided by the community. We take a look at Rashi, and by the way, Rashi occupies both columns on this Omid. So we look at the Rashi at the bottom of the outside column. Mitzuvin lasos malachto, sha'aron betchilo hitila kosuv hamlocha al Moshe. Initially, the obligation of making the aron was placed on Moshe. And then it was placed on the community. So that indicates to us that once one achieves Talmud Chacham status, then the community is expected to support his basic needs. Let's continue in the Gemara. Omar Rava. And you'll notice that we have a series of double underlines. These are markings to highlight comments regarding Talmidei Chachomim. So Rava says, "Kol Talmid Chacham she'ein toichei kiboroi." Any Talmid Chacham whose interior is not like his exterior. Now we're making the assumption that we're describing a Torah scholar that walks around with dignified garments that are associated with Torah scholarship, and if he is an individual who has a problematic, we'll say, personality, his tocho, his essence, doesn't match his exterior, ain't no Talmud Chacham. He's not classified as a Torah scholar. And the classification of someone being a Talmud Chacham carries with it numerous halachas that we're way beyond the purview of our Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shir right here, but as you go through the Shas, you see many, many different references to the way we treat a Talmud Chacham, the expectations of a Talmud Chacham, etc. and so forth. But if someone is not a genuine Talmud Chacham, in other words, he has the exterior of a Talmud Chacham, but his interior doesn't match that, he doesn't deserve to be classified as a Talmud Chacham. Abaye vitemo rabo barulo nikro nisav. Abaye says he is considered disgusting. Shenemar af ki nisav v'ne'eloch ish shoyse kemayim avlo. The ish shoyse kemayim, Rashi says, the one who drinks Torah like water. There are many places that Torah is compared to water, so that here you have a pasuk that makes reference to someone who is engaged in Torah study, but he is nevertheless disgusting in his personality, in his behavior. This, of course, brings into question an issue that bothers many, and it's a subject worth discussing and analyzing, and that is, how could it be someone is engaged in Torah study and yet it doesn't have the effects that you thought it might have. It doesn't have the desired effects. So let it be known that there's no magic involved, and there are many references in Shas to a person who, and we're going to see more here as we go along, that improper intent, that when one approaches Torah study, he has to approach it with a certain prior intent, prior kavona, before engaging in the study. So there's a certain, we'll call it, intellectual aspect of Torah study, and then there is another dimension involving personality, intent, and dedication and connection with the Almighty that must be present in order for the Torah to have its desired effects. And that can be compared, if it's easier to see this by looking at examples in the physical world, a person can fill up a tray of ice, in other words, water in a tray that's designed for making ice, but if you don't put it into the freezer, it's just not going to turn into ice. A person can be prescribed medications by doctors to solve an ailment, but if he doesn't take the medications under the necessary surrounding conditions that are conducive for the medication to have its effect, by taking the medications, if someone is suffering from a type of whatever ailment and he requires an environment of warmth, the taking of the medicines and then standing in a winter blizzard and expecting the medications to have their desired effect is a hopeless cause. So that in addition to the medication, and we see the Torah, and we'll see that very shortly in this Omid, the Torah is compared to a medication. So take the analogy all the way. There is a medication, but there are surrounding circumstances in order for it to be effective. So that is what we are seeing here. It's such an important point that even though we're delaying on this a moment or two, it's significant enough to bear in mind. We continue in the Gemara. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Amar Rav Yonasan, Mai Dichtiv, Lomoze Mechir Biad Ksil Liknois Chochma Velev Oyen. And he explains the pasuk, Oy Lohem L'Soineim Shel Talmidei Chachamim, woe unto, and here again you have a euphemism, the enemies of the Talmidei Chachamim, woe unto Torah scholars, She'oiskim Etor V'ein Bohem Yirah Shemayim, they engage in Torah study, but they don't have the fear of heaven in them. Just like we said before, you can pore over the books, listen to lectures, but you do so in a godless way. So that is, this pasuk makes reference to the woe upon such individuals. Machriz Rubyanai, Rabbi Yannai announces, Chaval al deles le darta vitaro le darte ovid. Woe unto the one that doesn't have a courtyard and he simply engages in the making of a fence. He's making a fence, and the analogy here is the courtyard is the property, the goal, so to speak. The goal is to achieve Yiras Shamayim, God-fearing closeness to the Almighty, and the vehicle for that is the Torah. So if you have someone that is just engaged in making the fence, that's studying the Torah, but doesn't have the main element, the main property, the courtyard, the house, or whatever, so he is wasting his time. Omar lehu Rava l'Rabbanan. B'matusa minachu. Rava pleads with the students, the scholars. B'matusa minachu in English would say, please. Lo tirsun tarti gehenem. Don't inherit two purgatories. Now, what is that? So Rashi says, tarti gehenem lius yigem v'melim b'tor b'lamazeh, to be involved with the toil of over Torah study in this world, the lo tekaimuha, the tirshi gehenem, and not fulfill it, you know, study the Torah, not fulfill it, and thereby inherit a portion of purgatory, b'moschem, in your death, and even in this world, so you were studying Torah, you weren't taking advantage of all kinds of bodily pleasures that you could have otherwise taken advantage of. So you didn't enjoy this world, and you're not going to enjoy the next world. Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, that's a pasuk, and the pasuk says this is the Torah Asher Som Moshe. Som literally means he placed, but the shin, which we call a sin, that's a with the shin pronounced as an S, can be spelled also with a letter samach. And if you spell it with a samach, sam is a medicine. Zocha nasis lo sam chayim. If he merits to study Torah with the proper intention, so it becomes like an elixir of life. Lo zocha. If, however, he doesn't achieve that, then nasis loy sam miso, it becomes like a poison, a medicine of death. V'hainu di omar Rava, and it's in this vein that Rava says, the omen law sama dechaya, one who learns it properly, learns it lishma, so it becomes an elixir of life. The lo omen law sama demosa, it becomes like poison, an elixir of death. Omar of Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmeni tells us, Reb Yonason Rami. Reb Yonason raises two psukim. Ksiv Pekudei Hashem Yishorim Mesamchi Lev. One pasuk says that the teachings of Hashem are straight and they are source of joy. Uksiv Imras Hashem Tzrufa. The teachings of God Tzrufa are they are trying or they are forging. That doesn't indicate happiness though. So the Gemara answers, Zocha, if he merits, like we explained before, Misamchoso, it serves as a source of joy for him. Lo Zocha, Tsarfoso. If not, then it forges him. And Rashi says, Tsarfoso, Bisurin Ubegehenim. He then it will experience pain, suffering, and eventually purgatory. So that once again, we see time and time again that the study of Torah is predicated upon proper intent. Reish Lakish Omar, Migufe Dekra Nafka. Reish Lakish is from the Pasuk itself, you learn these points. Zocha, Tsor Fasu L'chaim. The term Tsor Reif has a dual connotation. It means to forge something, to strengthen something, but here it means it can strengthen him for life. Lo zocha sor faso lemisa. Otherwise, it forms him to a destiny of death. Yiras Hashem tohir omedes lo'ad. Omer Rabbi Chanina. This pasuk that says that the fear of God is purity and lasts for eternity. Rabbi Chanina says, Zeh haloymei Torah b'taro. This is a reference to one who studies Torah in a state of purity. Mahi, what do you mean by a state of purity? Answer, Noisei Isha v'achakach lomei Torah. One who first gets married and having a wife at one side, so that will save him from impure thoughts. That, of course, is the hope, and without a wife, so it's almost impossible. So having a wife and then studying Torah, that's the desired way to do things, so that when you're studying Torah, you're doing so with a pure state of mind. Edus Hashem Ne'emona. That is Pasuk Ches, from Perek Yutes of Tehillim. It says, Omar, Edus Hashem Ne'emona, Omar Rabbi Chiyo Bar Abba, Ne'emona Hi Lahoyed B'lom Deo. You can rely on the Torah to testify about those that study it, who fulfilled it and who did not. The Torah eventually will serve as a witness for those who studied it. Maisa Roikem, Maisa Choshev. Here we go back to the clothing of the clothing or the different fabrics that were prepared for the Beis HaMikdash, the clothing of the Kehanim. Omar, if one describes it as Roikem and one describes it as Choshev. Roikem has to do with embroidering, and we'll see Choshev in a moment. Omar Abelazar, Sheroikmim B'mokom Shechoshvin. This means that first they would choshev, is to, in this case, to make an outline of what they wanted to embroider with. They would use some dyes or inks, and upon the pictures that they drew, they would then embroider. So they would rokmin, they would embroider on the place that was already delineated. Tana mishmei de Rabbi Nechemya, rokem maisem machat. Rokem indicates embroidery with a thread and needle. Lefikoch parts of echo. Therefore, the image would appear on one side of the cloth, the other side not having something discernible. Choshev equals maisa oreg, something woven. So lefikoch shnei partsufos. Therefore, in weaving an image into a cloth, as part of the weaving, the image would appear on both sides. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.